way that this is going to appear is actually as an MP3 for download. So,
very cool.
Whatever you say, it'll be, you know, we don't edit anything.
Used against me.
Yeah, totally.
Used against me in a court of law.
That's right. So, and we only have a couple, like 10-year-old readers or visitors of our site, so you can, you know, use as many swear words as you want. So, let's talk about how The Tripper is your directorial debut. Were you intimidated by that at all, to be put in that position?
No, I mean, I wouldn't say intimidated. I've been doing movies for a while now, so I mean, acting in them, so I always paid attention
right.
to what directors were doing. I've worked with a lot of first-time directors, and I didn't let that get me down or stop me. There's a nerve element that's just there. I mean, it's a lot of pressure, and your heart really starts going, and your stress level goes through the roof. But no, I was excited. I've had a ton of stories in my head and things I've wanted to say and you know, points I wanted to make. And a while back, I just sat down and said, you know what, I'm going to start doing some of these things and not just thinking and talking about them.
Right. Was it a natural progression, do you feel, like creatively, to go from, you know, being in front of the camera to behind the camera?
Yeah, I think, like, I don't know, actors that have been doing it a little while that get behind the camera, I think they have an understanding of sort of how the thing works, but until I did it myself, I really didn't have any idea of how much goes into a film and how important different roles are. Like, the first AD's role is so much more intense and difficult and all-encompassing than I ever was aware of. I mean, they are in charge of everything. I mean, they have to make sure the prop masters have the right props there, and they have to make sure the caterer's on time.
Right.
The craft service has enough, you know, bagels. I mean, it's unbelievable what they do, and actors show up and this and that, plane flights. I mean, and then a production designer, you know, I never really knew how into every aspect of the film that goes. I mean, they work through the wardrobe, and they work with the set decorating, and they work with the DP and the director and sort of setting up this world. So getting in the DP, I mean, that alone, I mean, I had Bobby Bukowski, who was a friend and did us a favor by doing this, and he's just such a tremendous talent, and his knowledge and his love for nature really helped in the look of the movie.
Yeah, there seems to be, I just based off the trailer, I mean, you know, it's very much, it does feel very stylized. Was that something that was, like, important to you to make it, you know, kind of feel, or maybe be appropriate to the genre that you were trying to, you know, capture there?
Yeah, definitely. We decided to shoot it on Super 16 to have that sort of old 70s slasher movie feel.
Right.
And the Redwood Forest, I really wanted to shoot there because there's, like, real creepiness to them, although they're my favorite trees and area in the world.
Right.
There's, like, this this real, you know, they call it, if they're old enough, they said the trees are medieval.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, so there's this real sort of, you know, ancient, creepy element, and I knew Bobby loved nature. Like, he's an avid hiker, and I knew he could just shoot a movie that would look like, you know, one thing I love about some movies, it just takes you away, and, like, especially if it's in an environment that's just interesting to look at, and, you know, and it's perfect for a setting for hippies,
right?
For a music festival, and a setting for, you know, all of this crazy violence to then occur. It
right.
kind of, like, offsets each other.
The genre, you know, that you're capturing here is something that seems to be coming back, you know, a lot, like with, you know, kind of the Cabin Fever, Feast, Slither kind of stuff. Is it a genre that you always kind of had an affinity for?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, just working on the Scream movies and watching Wes Craven do his thing and
right.
and seeing the scripts that Kevin Williamson wrote, especially the first one, just I paid a lot of attention, you know, on the set. Wes Craven, watch a film in front of an audience, the Scream in front of an audience, and the audience would, you know, be laughing, and this would happen, they'd jump out of their seats, and he'd just get such a kick out of it, you know?
Right.
I just always love that. I love the campiness and the fun of horror films, and I love the fact that you can get away with so much more drugs and violence and sex and rock and roll than you can in a lot of other projects.
Right, exactly. Yeah, how much of what your main vision of the movie was, you know, before shooting began versus like what you guys actually put on film, how much of that was captured, do you think?
A lot of it. I mean, it was definitely working with really tremendous actors. They, you know, a lot of the time they don't do anything that doesn't feel real to them, and you gotta respect that, especially if you respect them and trust them. You know, you also have to know when to say, you know, just trust me, it's gonna work, and I know this feels awkward, but,
right,
you know, work that, the way we're shooting it, you won't feel so on the nose. But yeah, and like Paul's character completely evolved from the what was originally written, and he started cursing in one scene, and then it just became, all right, you just got a potty mouth, your character is, you know, filthy mouth. You know,
right,
it has fun with it, like excessive, you know, excessive use of the word fuck and, you know, motherfuckers and all this shit. It's just, it's pretty out there. So so that evolved a lot, and, you know, and then you're on the set, and, you know, we have this one scene where Thomas Jane's sort of shutting the whole place down, and he's apologizing to everyone who's having to leave, and, you know, I just threw out a bunch of like jokes, and we just kind of jump cut them, and you know, they just worked out, you know, and Thomas can sell anything, so and he's super funny. I mean, the people in the movie just are some of my favorite actors, but also they're actors that can do comedy, which is a really, you know, when they do it right, and when all things come together, it's one of the best combinations. Realistic character that's fun and because from its character places and not from just jokes.
Right. Yeah. How did you pick? Did you kind of handpick the cast? I mean, like, did you have say in getting Paul or, you know, in Thomas?
Well, yeah, I begged him. I mean, I was like, please do me a favor. Thomas was the first person I gave the script to.
Oh, nice.
His company called Raw Entertainment. They have a first book deal at Lionsgate, and his partner is a guy named Steve Niles, who's a really big in the horror community as a comic book author and also a screenwriter. So the two of them read it, and they wanted to be a part of it and help me produce it, and Thomas jumped on board to play the lead character, Buzz, sort of small-town cop that's not crazy about all these drugged-out hippies being in his forest. And then after him, I went to Paul Rubens and Lucas Haas, Baltazar Getty, Brad Hunt, all my other friends to help join in and be a part of this. And, you know, once I had that sort of core group of actors, it's easier to, you know, get in touch with Jason Mewes or Jamie King or Martha Thompson, you know, kind of
right.
But then the rest.
Since you seem to have a hand in a lot of different things, you know, you wrote this, you directed it, you also act, but then you also do a lot of production work. Do you consider yourself to be, or do you find yourself to be somewhat of a control freak in a situation like this?
Well, as a director, you almost have to be a control freak because it all lands on your head anyway. And, you know, some of the best producers are control freaks. I don't know. I guess I definitely have that in me, you know.
Right.
Like, it's also a reason to direct, is to, like, you know, get your vision out there without having to compromise as much as you do. And, you know, sometimes when you have a totally different take on it than a director, and sometimes you have to fight for your character and doing that thing when it's not like a super comfortable situation. But it's important that when people do, you know, believe me, that they stand up and express themselves and try to, you know, do it.
Right.
But as far as producing and everything, I don't know. I just like being involved in different aspects and having a lot going on. And, you know, it's been a little crazy. It's probably been the craziest year ever. But it's also a great sense of accomplishment once you complete something and put this much work into something. It's great when it all comes together.
Yeah, that's one of the
things. Like last night, we were at we had the premiere at a graveyard.
Oh, nice.
We grew up right down the street on Gower and Melrose, and this graveyard's on Gower above Paramount Studios. And we used to go there, walk through it, go to, Douglas Fairbanks' grave and Valentino's grave, like mausoleum space. And just, it was always an amazing place. So for me to, like, be able to screen my film there and have all my friends and family as a part of it and work together, and, you know, it was really a dream come true.
That's really great. So I was going to ask you, kind of, you know, you're saying this year's crazy, like, you have so many things going on, but, you know, with this and in case of emergency, and you guys you're just involved in so many different things. Is this, like, is 2007, you know, the year of David Arquette, like 1990 was, I don't know, the year of MC Hammer?
Well, it's funny that you say that, because I'm actually wearing parachute pants right now. That's such a coincidence.
That's so hot.
I don't know about that. I just, I just really had a vision for getting this film done, and my wife supported me completely, helped me produce it and finance it, and it's just, this whole process has been a process of not letting the studios dictate, you know, what you want to do, and hopefully people are going to be able to see it. It's hard to get film in the theaters when you don't have a big distribution company,
right,
or a ton of money behind you. So, more so than anything, it's just I hope to do this for a long time, not just be like a flash in the pan, you know.
Sure.
I enjoy acting, and I still want to act. It's a luxury, but there's, you know, a lot of people have different opinions of me as an actor, or think I'm either a comedian or... or don't like my comedy, or some people know of my independent sort of more dramatic work, and some people don't. But you know, to me, it's more about opportunities and stories I believe in. Working with my friends and family and my wife and on projects that are interesting and exciting.
Right. Well, I just got two more for you, and then I'll let you go. Neither of them really have anything to do with anything we talked about. The one is, I know you're a big wrestling fan. Were you at WrestleMania this year?
I wasn't. I wanted to go there to help promote the film, but they're promoting Stone Cold Steve Austin's movie.
Oh, yeah.
And they couldn't have any competition, so I didn't want to sort of go there if it didn't make any sense.
Sure. Did you watch it, though?
I didn't watch it. I do love wrestling, though.
I do, too. And I didn't...
Rick
this is
Flair,
the first year I haven't watched it in a while.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, Ric Flair is the greatest.
Yeah.
That guy is unbelievable. And I did a... You know, we did this tour. Our website's myspace.com/thetrippermovie.
Right.
We did this tour where we got on a bus and we videotaped everything, and we, you know, went city to city. And in Detroit, we really didn't have an event in the evening to do. So, you know, a friend of mine who's a wrestling fan as well, and my assistant on the film, on the sort of the distribution part of this film, we decided to film like a whole wrestling, like... improv 2 match, which was really kind of fun for wrestling fans. I think they'll probably dig it. It's on the MySpace page if you if you click on the one that looks like we're sitting at a table.
Okay.
Yeah, check it out, because it's just, it's stupid. People are like, what does this have to do with anything? You know, but, you know, I also peed the tripper, like I urinated the tripper.
Yeah.
For some reason, that's the one that caught on. I get 150,000 hits on it, and, you know, that's the thing that just helped get the word out about the film. It's pretty bizarre.
Well, people just have to understand that wrestling is life.
That's right. It's a definite metaphor for it all.
Okay, the last question I have for you is one that we ask everybody. It has literally to do with nothing that we've talked about or nothing in general. The question is, do dogs have lips?
Yes, dogs have lips for sure, especially my dog Ella. She's got the cutest little black lips, and sometimes I just make her pucker up and I just kiss her like there's no tomorrow.
Oh, that's adorable. Are you wearing parachute pants when you do that?
Sometimes. I have to try that.